Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. It's a little bit of midweek content. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners. So let's be friends, and we can be friends in real life. Today, we are going to be building our ultimate grid, figuring out who deserves to be on the grid in 2025. But in just 4 weeks' time, Matt and I are going to be in Miami. So we are definitely going to be there. We are definitely doing some kind of listener meetup, either in the venue or at a location near Miami Beach. But either way, we're going to have something probably on Saturday, maybe on Friday, and we definitely want to meet up with as many people as possible. So if you're going to the Miami Grand Prix and you want to meet up with us, maybe watch a live podcast recording, email me spanners@mistapex.net with the subject line Miami. The more people that message me, the more plans that I can make. So get in touch. Super exciting. Okay, today we're going to be building our ultimate grid, and we're going to be compiling it based on selfish desires of the viewer. So the criteria is mushy, the opinions are beer addled. I am joined by Matt Two Rumpets. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Spanners. I gotta say, this is going to be almost as much fun as that time we tried to drive all the way across England together.
We didn't try to drive across England together. What are you talking about?
I'm just making things up.
Okay, that's a really strong intro to the show. Make things up and confuse me. Thanks a lot, Matt. Let's see if we can do any better with Chris Stevens. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Spanners. This is a worse idea than when we tried to walk across England in a perfectly straight line together.
Yeah, but we did that shoeless, which in reflection was a mistake. All right, come on. One more roll of the dice. I'm joined by the very sensible race car tire testing instructor, racing champion, Bradley Philpott. Hello, Brad.
I was naked in the bath and you dragged me out to come here.
Okay, I need to be very clear for legal purposes. I did not go to Brad's house, invade his bathroom and drag him naked out of the bath. That didn't happen. Metaphorically, I invited you to come and jump on.
My one was the only one. Mine was the only one that was like a true thing of the intros.
Okay, excellent. Why don't we get to the topic, which was sent to us brilliantly in the Slack group by Justin, who asked a question and said, I was listening to the Grand Prix recap on the drive this morning, and everyone seemed to agree that Sainz deserves a race seat next year. I agree, says Justin. But we've heard this about a few drivers recently, i.e. Behrmann, Lawson, and some not so recently, i.e. Mick Schumacher. So I'm curious, with 20 seats on the grid next year, who should be in and who should be out? We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Right then, Matt, what is our criteria for our perfect grid, our 2025 grid? What does that mean? Who deserves to be on the grid?
Well, we've seen some very talented people walk into Formula One and do a race or two or even several races, and then walk right back out. Plus, there are some very promising rookies hanging about and being flogged mercilessly by their backers. So our assignment today, should we choose to accept it, is to pick the 20 drivers who absolutely should be on the grid in 2025, and then figure out who gets those top six seats out of all the drivers that are going to be there.
I think we can have some fun with this, though, Chris, if we say we can also move drivers between teams, like we choose the driver pairings.
Yeah, I can roll with that. I will say that when I started looking at the options earlier this afternoon, it was actually quite a bit harder than I thought it was going to be to actually find drivers that are not currently in F1 who deserve a spot in there. Now, there are a few, don't get me wrong, but when I tried to come up with more than three, I started looking through like old F2 grids and go, nah, not that guy. No, not him.
Well, that's a good point. So that should be the first thing to establish who is out of the loop. I think we've got a pretty decent list here, Brad, but you could probably take us outside of pretty much everyone else here is either recently been an F1 or is an F2 driver. We've got a couple from IndyCar.
So I mean, I've not been looking at any particular lists. I've just been thrown in here at the last minute, but I've still got loads of really good ideas.
Okay.
And I think, first of all, we should rule out the IndyCar driver. I don't mean rule them out. I think we should offer a place up to IndyCar, and it should be one place. We should allow one IndyCar driver on, and the way we should do that is have a shootout. So we'll take a couple of, you know, 2-3-year-old F1 cars, spend a couple of days at a track everyone's familiar with, and whoever the quickest IndyCar driver is, they get in. As simple as that.
I mean, it's America. Just give them guns. It's quicker.
Matt, you are absolutely chaos today. You know this isn't a Patreon pod. You know that this is like a real stream that we're doing things on. So, no.
It's a joke.
Missed Apex podcast does not want to have gun violence in order to decide the grid. We're going to do it using our words. So the list I've got at the moment, we could establish the outsiders who currently don't have a seat. And we'll see if the live chat either agrees or disagrees and can suggest other people. So Carlos Sainz is the main one. So that's what this is all based on. And I think no one's going to disagree that he deserves a place on the seat. Obviously, Ollie Bearman impressed. Lawson impressed in his four races as well. Antonelli is highly rated. Drogovic has been on that F1 radar for a while. No. Okay. We got our first disagreement then. So Drogovic.
I think in seasons gone by, Drogovic would have been a great shout. He won F2. But if you look at it in reality, he didn't win F2 in his first season or I think even his second season. Chris is the expert here. Was it third or fourth year he was in F2?
Third season. And the thing is, they
in a weak-ish year as well.
Yeah.
It's not all F2 championships are equal. And we can probably point to the Mick Schumacher one as well as being not one of the harder years and not one of the really impressive championship wins. Same as Jolyon Palmer probably as well. It's obviously really hard to win any championship. It's really hard to even drive a Formula 2 car, let alone be good enough to be in. But we're talking about, we want the best 20 drivers in the world. We want the elite of the elite. And in subsequent F2 seasons, there have been drivers who deserve it more. And I think Drogovic just doesn't get a look in this list. There are people who are just objectively better.
No, I agree. He's a fine racing driver. And I think in IndyCar, in WEC or in Formula E would do really well. But Formula One material is a very different thing.
That's so interesting because as someone who I don't like track the junior series as they're coming up, like the name Drogovic has been everywhere. He's been doing loads of the free practices. Like, surely people were serious about putting him in a car, in a seat.
So he's doing free practices because Aston Martin don't have, you know, young drivers. They don't have an academy, right? And he's their reserve driver. He's literally all they have.
Well,
so
okay.
it's different to when Ferrari puts Bearman in a Haas for FP1 or Red Bull are putting Ayumu Iwasa in the AlphaTauri, the RV,
the Visa cash app, yeah,
the Japanese, cash grab, yeah. For Suzuka,
for the Japanese Grand Prix, yeah.
Mm.
Okay, so I think we're right by saying the best 20 drivers available. There may be some fringe benefits where you would want someone because we're talking about entertainment here. So when we get to Stake, there's been reports that Stake F1 are looking to replace both Bottas and Zhou Guan Yu. But you've just made us all fall in love with Bottas. And if you take him away from us too soon, we're going to be mad.
But I think Bottas is more needed at the team as like an experienced head who can help bring a younger driver up to speed. So personally, I would really love to see Teo Porcher get a shot at F1 in the Sauber. It was Sauber Junior Academy. And the thing is, I know we just made the argument that that Drugovich won his F2 title in his third season, which is what Porcher also did. But you've got to remember how ridiculously young Porcher was when he arrived in Formula 2. He was just 17 years old when he made his F2 debut. And for me, it's just a considerably different scenario to Drugovich's situation. And it's the same one that Oli Bearman is in at the moment as well. Right. And I'd like to see what Porcher can do in a Formula 1 car.
Chris, would you agree that when we have our IndyCar driver shootout, if Porcher wins the Super Formula Championship this year, he'll also win a prize drive in the IndyCar shootout? So we'll just like include him on the same day. And then we, you know, if he's not quick enough, then we rule him out.
So, okay. So who's in the shootout so far? So who's in the, what? I guess this is the non-feeder series shootout, I guess.
Let's say, just because, you know, for time's sake, anyone who finishes in the top 10 of IndyCar in the championship this year.
Okay.
Plus Porsche if he wins Super Bowl.
Okay. So like Dixon, Award.
Yeah. Powell. Yeah, all those guys.
Pato Werther.
All the guys that we hear, you know, if they had their shot in F1, they'd be good enough. They could do it. Let's give them some time to practice and then stick them head to head.
I've got a section called shootout that we're going to have at the end.
I love that. But I do think, number one, we should be giving more weight to drivers that have actually competed in Formula One and done a halfway decent job. So we're going to overlook some people who've had drives in the past right now. Like no one's mentioned Fittipaldi, for example, who's doing well outside of Formula One.
Please.
But he did drive the Haas and not crash it. But I also want to point out that from the chat, ignorant American Hayden is making the suggestion that perhaps we should have, in order to get more drivers on the grid, one of the main drivers take the sprint races off and let one of your reserve or junior drivers compete instead.
We're not doing that. 20 drivers.
How about we actually have the right number of teams and we allow Andretti and we encourage another team?
Dear.
So open up four more places on the grid.
I did consider that, but I think it's going to be neater and more challenging and make us ask more questions if we don't just go everybody in. Let's
mean in our discussion tonight, actually. I just mean the powers that be should be encouraging that in real life.
Agreed. Right.
Okay, cool. So I don't think we had any argument with Bearman, Lawson, Antonelli. Oh, we did?
Well, no. Well, I have an argument with Matt over Fittipaldi.
Oh, okay. Go on then.
Because Pietro, again, it's just way too late for him. And I'm sorry, but if the bar is not to crash, then, well, we can just let everybody into Formula One because that's a ridiculously low bar.
I would simply say that in this particular formula, experience matters, and being able to get round a Grand Prix distance without destroying the tires has been a skill that not everyone has been able to demonstrate who is on this list.
Experience matters, and he doesn't have a lot of it. Let's be real. Like, would you take a Fittipaldi over a Lawson or over
Lawson? No, Lawson is my new favorite person. If Ocon goes, I'm all in on Lawson. So no, you do not get to do that.
Okay, Brad.
So whilst we're just mentioning Lawson,
yeah,
he's likely to race this year, isn't he? So I think he's going to be in anyway.
Yeah, it's possible.
I think Ricciardo is probably not going to last the season unless something magic happens. So Lawson might be just in anyway. It might be Ricciardo who's having to make a case for himself.
But I agree with the idea that Ricciardo is currently undeserving of the seat.
I'm afraid so. Have we lost our first person off the grid?
So, well, I would have said Joe when we were talking about Porcher, because he should be with Bottas. But yes, let's say officially,
okay,
it should be Ricciardo.
Does nobody want to defend Ricciardo? But go on, Chris, make the case.
what I know that RB wants to distance themselves from the Red Bull team and act more independently, which makes no sense when they basically have the same name now. But also, you know, they don't want to be the Red Bull Junior team anymore. But that being said, why is Ricciardo in that team? You know, even if he were to end up back at Red Bull, I still don't think he's the right person for that job anymore. And we haven't seen, you know, the Ricciardo of the Red Bull era ever since he left, and I don't see him suddenly coming back. And for me, Lawson is a much more rightful owner of that seat. Frankly, he's got a lot more potential.
So don't get me wrong. I do love our Antipodean brethren quite a bit.
And well, whoa, I'm not letting that go unchallenged. Antipodean? What?
Yeah,
what did you say?
Yeah. I was going to say that too.
What hell, this is like aluminum all over again.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And how much more of this show do you want to waste arguing about how I pronounce it correctly?
You started it.
Yes. But I'm looking at Ricciardo. And so I could put on my tinfoil hat and say, I think this entire thing was engineered by Horner because he likes Ricciardo, wants him in the team. I wouldn't go so far as to allege that, you know, they messed with DeVries' car a lot, but you could go there if you really wanted to go crazy.
I mean, I think you just did.
But what I said, don't do that, but that's okay. Sometimes people don't listen well. What I want to say is I'm looking at his performance. Now, it's only a couple of races, only a few data points, but I'm starting to get very bad McLaren vibes from what's happening right now at RB, Visa Cash App. And it just, I just worry that he really isn't going to be able to pull this out. And he needs to, because not everybody at the big company is as on his side as I think Horner was, or at least that's what was presented in the Drive to Survive that we all watched.
The worrying thing is that he's looking to kind of shift it onto there's something wrong with the car. There's something not right. I'm getting them to look over it with a fine tooth comb. And we didn't actually mention that on the race review, but he said stuff like, at McLaren, I was lost. I didn't know what was happening. Here, I know what I'm doing. I'm all over it, but there's something, the car's different. Now, it's not impossible that there's a cracked chassis and that we all owe him a massive apology. But the problem is when he's underwhelmed at Renault, he was fine at Renault and then really poor at McLaren and then just hasn't at any point looked faster than Tsunoda, who is, I feel like, is a little bit disrespected and underrated. Then this starts to form a pattern. And then when you add age into it, it's almost a no-brainer, isn't it, to say make way in that organization. I'm deleting it as we speak, Matt, because unless you see a miracle, the O's gone, the D's gone, it's going.
Well, it's just, it's that thing. You know, you can get lost chasing perfection or chasing a solution to a problem. I mean, and you see it in other sports too. I point at someone like maybe Tiger Woods, who was winning everything and decided he had to change his entire swing and got hurt himself training, got completely lost, and has given up in a lot of ways a chance to be as dominant as some of the people from the past because he had to be better than he already was. And I just feel like Ricciardo, he lost his way at McLaren, and I'm not sure he's found his way out of that jungle yet. And if he doesn't, then yeah, no, I mean, as painful as it is, because he is a big presence on the grid, as painful as it is, there's no way he deserves to keep on having a drive.
I already deleted it.
When you've got people like knocking on the door.
People like the list I'm trying to get through. Okay, cool. Doohan? No. No one's fancy.
I like Doohan. I think he deserves a chance.
I'd like to give him a shot. Do I watch him in F2 and think that's an F1 champion in the making? No.
Oh, all I'd say on that is if we're going to give everyone who's maybe shown enough in Formula 2 that they might be good enough to be a decent F1 driver, we're going to have to be doing a lot of test runs.
Okay,
we're going to have to get through a lot of drivers, because Doohan has shown the level of driving that you could point to loads of other F2 drivers that have done similar and haven't got their shot.
Okay.
Occasionally, you will get someone who has an underwhelming junior career with, you know, a couple of F2 race wins or whatever, and they get into F1 and actually they just click and it's brilliant. But I think he's on the list that we should just leave to the side.
Okay. Well, this list really was you know, people whose name has been mentioned, possibly has a super license or has just left, or who is linked in a team in an academy. And I was just looking for any of you guys to go, no, we definitely won't have that guy on the list. So who's the Japanese driver, Chris, that is doing a test?
Ayumu Iwasa.
Iwasa.
And he is in the same boat as Doohan.
Oh, okay, so he's sort of hovering around there. Schumacher is somebody who people still want in and still has ambitions in Formula One. And unless any of you can make a case that you would put him in your team, you would consider him, then I'm deleting him from our list.
No.
All I would say about Schumacher is, I don't think we've necessarily seen him have a completely fair shot. He obviously showed really, really well against Mazepin, but that's not really a data point. And then he struggled the following year when he was getting conflicting signals and he was up against a very, very experienced hand in Magnussen. And he was being told he needs to be fast, but he also needs to definitely not damage the car. And when you put a driver in that position where they're having to second guess the way they're driving, I don't think we've seen Schumacher drive naturally. I wouldn't be against seeing him have a proper shot, but I'm also not devastated if we leave him off the list because he has had more of a shot than a lot of people would ever get.
I'm happy to take him off the list, but that also is our next, that brings up our next current driver casualty that I'm going to propose here. Because you're right, he did go up against Magnussen, but Magnussen isn't looking that quick. It pains me because I really am a Kevin Magnussen fan. Really big fan of the way he was driving in Saudi. He's a great personality as well. But he's got, I think he's got like 8 kids now. So that's 3/10 for every kid. So if he's not living up to Hülkenberg and not Hülkenberg pace, to me, if we're talking about who deserves to be on the grid and our ultimate grid, I am going to propose that we unfortunately lose Kevin Magnussen.
Yep.
I disagree.
All right. Make the case.
Of course you do.
I will make the case in two distinct ways. Way number one is I don't think you'll find a better defensive driver on the grid, and that includes Alonso. And I think he proved that in Saudi Arabia. And way two is I think he's had a series of underwhelming results that aren't entirely his fault. And I'm going to mention specifically Australia, where the team admitted they got his strategy wrong, pitted him in response to Albon. Instead, they should have overcut him. And they felt he thoroughly should have been chasing Tsunoda. They didn't think they had the pace to beat him, but he really should have been in Tsunoda's wake at the end of the race, except for they got the strategy call wrong. I think the problem you have is it's really difficult to distinguish Hülkenberg and Magnussen, except for I would give Hülkenberg the slight nod on overall qualifying pace. Yeah. But I think in terms of driving in a race and racecraft, I might prefer Magnussen. Plus, he's demonstrated he will play that team game.
All right, good. Just being wary of the time. We're already half an hour in and we've made one
chaos
deletion so far. Okay, so I put in the Slack chat, Magnussen in or out, and I'm really, really surprised. It is universal. There isn't a single person there, and I don't think it's from not liking him. I don't think it's from not admiring him. I think we're talking about our ultimate grid, and Magnussen is our next casualty. So we've got 3 open spots on the grid at the moment: Visa Cash App, Mercedes, and Haas. So the only other drivers was De Vries and Fittipaldi. Fittipaldi. I'm going with Chris's argument. I saw the argument that you made, Matt, but I'm going without it. And De Vries is the last person on my potential outsiders list. Has that ship sailed, or did he get a very unfair shake of the stick?
Oh, he got a very unfair shake of the stick, but even before everyone said that he shouldn't be in F1. I mean, I was already saying that. So not like vindication, but no, I don't think he's, the elite level that we're talking about here.
What I like is he really shouldn't have been offered that spot, but then they offered him that spot and made sure he did very poorly in it. So I don't know. That seems like it cancels out somehow. I'm not sure we got to see him at his best at any point in that car, in that part of the season. But it's also hard to argue with the general sense of underwhelmingness of his time in the sport for whatever reason. So, honestly, maybe Van Dorn I'd rather see back if we're going to just be crazy now.
Yeah, on De Vries, I think I rate him really highly. I think he's a great driver. It's just some people aren't necessarily elite F1 driver level. might be better than F1 drivers in certain other machinery, but I'd say De Vries didn't stun in Formula 2, took a while to win the championship, maybe won it in a slightly weaker year. I know he won Formula E, but he doesn't look special in Formula E. You know, I never watch Formula E and think De Vries is one of the absolute top guys there, even though he has won the championship. And obviously we know how he did in Formula 1. So I think we've got enough data on De Vries to say, regardless of how good he might be in some other things, and maybe he could be okay and solid in F1, it's not one of the top 20.
Okay, we have to say that actually there'd be a lot of the Formula E drivers might have, you know, had they been given the chance, Albon style, been able to make a fist of it. What about your favourite in Formula E, Jake Dennis, that Chris Stevens sat down with and had 35 minutes interviewing the current Formula E champion? So we'll do a link in the show notes below to that interview, please, Matt. And it's on our Missed Apex Formula E channel as well. Subscribe to that on Spotify. But why not someone like Jake Dennis?
I have heard Jake Dennis talk about a potential Formula One seat, and I've heard how he spoke about it. And yeah, it was during an interview about, I mean, I haven't actually listened to Chris's interview yet. It's on my list to listen to, but wow, a different interview.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
And it was when Andretti were looking more likely to have a team. And he was asked, is there a chance to drive for Andretti in Formula One? Now you've won Formula E Championship. And he didn't really seem that interested. And I don't know whether that is him saying that he doesn't back himself in that arena. Maybe he's now specialized in Formula E as like, that's what he's happy with.
And GTs, to be fair.
And GTs. And so, although I think Jake Dennis is great, I think he could do really well. Obviously, he's done simulator driving for Red Bull, and I think he's driven the actual last year's Red Bull. I don't think he himself sees himself as a potential F1 driver. So that probably says it all.
Well, if we're going to talk Formula E, I think Jake, he might have the makings of it. But one driver I wish had more time in the sport would have been Jean-Éric Vergne. Now, I know he's a bit long in the tooth to resurrect now, but if we're just going to make like sort of these general arguments, like I feel like he didn't get his full due. And I'm saying this mostly because I want to make Chris argue with me because it looks like he is.
Brad,
I think if we're having the same discussion 7 or 8 years ago, Vergne would definitely be on the list for me. And I think when it was between him and Ricciardo, it was, you know, it was like a coin flip between them. I actually, this is hindsight now because we know how Ricciardo's doing right now. I kind of feel like Vergne might have been a better long-term F1 driver than Ricciardo. I know Ricciardo did really well in this short period at Red Bull, a couple of seasons where you might even say he did the best job in the whole field when he was really in his prime, in his early Red Bull years against Vettel, but
yeah.
Having said that, in the long term, I think Vergne is excellent. But yeah, he's too old, too long in the tooth. Yeah. And as the Slack chat is saying, maybe we're spending too long talking about people who definitely aren't going to get on this list.
Well, that was at a time, though, where Red Bull were using junior drivers for everything. You know, we need to use Alguersuari as a doorstop. We'll light our cigars with that one. So yeah, they were kind of going through them a bit. Chris?
There are two other former Red Bull juniors who ended up in Formula E who definitely should have ended up in Formula One. The first one is Robin Freins. And we talk about how, you know, Piastri won Formula Renault and then Formula 3 and then Formula 2 in back-to-back-to-back years. Freins did the same thing, just on a different path, because he wasn't on the F1 support bill. He was in the Formula Renault series, in the World Series by Renault. Titles back to back.
I'm going to defend our decision to be talking about the outsiders, because I think what it's establishing is the difficulties actually faced by some of their F1 teams. So, you know, one of the counter arguments when I was saying obviously Sargeant shouldn't have been kept on, a lot of fans of his will say, well, who else was there? Which, to be fair, is never really a strong starting point. You know, like if I say that my wife was with me because, you know, we were nearby and we were in a small town, that's not a great endorsement on me. It might still get me where I need to be. But there is a valid point to who else was there. And when you look down the list and you think, well, there's a couple of dozen drivers I can think of. As you can see with what we've just done there, we start narrowing them down very quickly. And let's say Sargeant is then bringing cash or would be being paid a low wage in the second year. I don't know what the deal is for the second year. That then
becomes a much more viable option than, say, trying to draw Carlos Sainz down to Williams. But I think we will go up to the top of the grid right now. Okay, don't worry about too much about hyper reality, but let's start at Red Bull. In our scenario here, where do we land? Without going too deep, where do we land? Because my instinct is Verstappen, this is Verstappen's last season at Red Bull. So I'm not going to include him in the Red Bull lineup. For me, I'm going to put him somewhere else.
Yeah, Brad looks stunned.
Why? I think he's... Okay. Let me extemporize then. Let me masticate on this point. Now, obviously, one brake duct failure doesn't prove anything. But obviously, if he has a DNF and a mechanical failure in Japan as well, I'm going to start asking some questions. But what Verstappen has done is he has got on the wrong side now of the most powerful, one of the most powerful senior managers in F1 history. Yeah, Christian Horner is an incredibly powerful man who, in my opinion, is going to win this little internal war at Red Bull because the 51% shareholder is on their side. So unless the Verstappens have done some serious back crawling, Horner's holding all the cards now. And if he wants to prove a point that no one's bigger than the team, then don't... And thing is, don't tell me, don't clutch your pearls and tell me that a car, that a team has never favoured mechanically one car over another. Don't even try and tell me that hasn't happened. A team boss, if it's convenient to him, one car will perform better than the other. So just watch that performance over the next few months and see how it goes. Brad.
I say this with no actual specialist knowledge on this. I don't have an insight into this. This is just vibes from what I've read on Twitter and just seen in general F1 media. I don't think this power struggle from Horner's side has ever been about getting rid of Max. And I think he will see keeping Max as a part of winning this power struggle.
I don't
think Max has any credible alternative team that he would care about going to.
But how
Max
about-
has made it absolutely clear in any time I've ever heard him speak that he only cares about winning and he would lose interest very, very quickly in a team where he didn't have a shot at winning.
How about keeping him, winning that power struggle, but Perez, you know, through a few DNFs, through a few weekends where the setup doesn't quite go right, Perez wins the championship. That's the ultimate win now in that power struggle.
I think the gap between the two of them is just far too big to do that in a realistic way. And I think it would be too obvious if that became the case because of the gap to Perez. So anyway, I don't see the same as you that this is Verstappen's last year. I think he's nailed on there for seasons and seasons to come. And so I think really it's about the second seat there.
Yeah, I think the ultimate win would surely be keeping Max and getting rid of Yoss, right?
How does that work? I think, okay, let's move on because I think Chris might be...
Yoss is not a thorn in his side anymore.
I think Chris might be advocating mafia-style crimes here.
I'm just saying, we all know who the conflict's actually between.
Okay, so I'm going to guess then, right? So what, Matt? Go on, Matt, what?
Well, no. What I want to say is that we're all talking about Max wanting to win or he gets bored, which I think is absolutely true. But he spent plenty of time at Red Bull not winning drivers' championships and also not being bored. I think he has three legitimate teams he could be interested in. You got Mercedes. Obvious, they look like they're on the downswing, but with the new power unit coming in 26, they might turn that around. Ferrari is Ferrari. They're there or thereabouts. They've already won a race this season. And the third one, and the one that's the most intriguing to me, would be Aston, because they're going to have the Honda power unit. They've started a new company. They're building a new factory, and Watanabe is going to be running it. And that's who was responsible for the amazing performance of the Honda power unit in the Red Bull. So I don't want to say he has no options. I agree. If I'm Horner, I do want him at Red Bull because he's the best driver on the grid right now, bar none. But if I'm Max and I just want to be able to win some races, I think I have some options, especially if I'm not getting on with my boss.
Oh, have you forgotten what you were going to say, Brad? Because you had your hand up before. I think we all forgot.
Oh,
Where
I think I know Matt said that Max has spent time not winning before, but that was before he
I agree.
I think it's very different position he's in now, where he's used to being dominant and just winning loads, and walking to championships. I think it's a much harder thing to then go back, especially the kind of person and the kind of driver he is, taking a step back and just accepting that, I'm just not just at the front all the time anymore. I think he would rather swallow his pride and tell his dad to butt out and keep the good car.
Okay, so we're going to keep, I think what you're saying is keep Verstappen at Red Bull. But you know I'm a big Perez fan. What I'm going to do, and I'm going to, unless anyone fights me here, I'm keeping Perez in F1. I think his history in F1, 9 podiums from the midfield, several race wins. I think he's a decent driver. He's gone into the same horrible position at Red Bull that other drivers have found themselves in. Gasly, Albon. So I think anything you say about Perez, like if you want to sling Perez out based on his Red Bull career, then you're slinging out Albon and Gasly as well. But I am happy to demote him. So my proposal is to put Perez in Haas.
The thing with that theory, though, Spanners, is that Albon and Gasly didn't have one of the best Formula One cars ever designed and not make it into Q2 on several occasions. But I see your point. I think that Perez is far more able to shine in the midfield than he is out in the front. So I wouldn't mind like put him back in the Aston Martin.
Name me a more successful midfield driver, Brad. I know you're not a Perez fan, but name me someone who got those results in the midfield.
I just think that's looking at the wrong thing in that situation, because knowing what we know now about Perez's relative performance, having had him in the spotlight more often, obviously being in a top team, we know his relative performance to a real top driver. And so really the question is, how high up would those cars that he was getting podiums in have been with an actual better driver?
Oh, no.
And I think Perez is, I know you said he's done better than Gasly and Albon at Red Bull.
No, I said similar.
I agree
similar.
With Chris. Hmm. I think he's had a much fairer crack of it. Most of his time he's had a car which is way easier to drive, better. He can afford to be further away from Max and still get front running finishes. I think if you slotted a Gasly or an Albon into that seat now, I think they would be closer to Max than Perez's. That's just how I feel. So I know you were conceding ground there by letting Perez stay in a low team.
All right.
I think Perez is on my doesn't deserve to be on the grid based on us putting the top 20 drivers in the world in.
Yeah, look at it this way. Like based on the list that I've put together, he's probably the 15th or 16th best driver in the field. And we've already named 5 drivers we'd rather see in Formula 1.
Okay, he's on the bubble.
All right,
he's on the bubble.
Okay, so he's on the Q1 bubble. So at the moment, I'm just resting him in Haas for the moment.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, Ferrari. We've got Leclerc and Hamilton. Now here, we never put anyone in the Red Bull. Okay, who do we put in the Red Bull?
Sainz.
Straight in. So we think that's a dream partnership. And so we've got a top car. Let's just say the gap closes for 2025 a little bit. So we're all going to see these competitions up front. Verstappen versus Sainz, I think we're throwing Sainz to the lion's den. So if you're a Sainz fan, I don't want him there.
No, me neither, to be honest. I don't know. I feel like, because obviously they were teammates before in their first year in Formula One at Toro Rosso. And, you know, sparks were sort of flying back then as well, quite early on. So I think it would be great drama for the sport. I don't know if it'll actually happen. I think it's a very unrealistic scenario.
See, to me, it's their pops that didn't really get on. Plus, they're both a lot older and more mature. But the problem I have here is a fundamental conflict. I agree with you. If you're a Sainz fan, you probably don't necessarily want him racing Max at Max's team, where he's had a long time to build a car that he really likes. On the other hand, if you're looking at the best driver that's not going to have a team next season, well, it's got to be Carlos Sainz.
I think I agree that it's throwing him to the lions of it because Max is the incumbent. That's the only reason, though. I think Sainz has proven he gets driving these regulations, which you can't say for all the drivers on the grid at the moment. Sainz has his head around how these cars, these ground effect cars, feel when you're racing at the front. And, you know, he's proven that he's good against a very highly rated teammate who is arguably one of, if not the fastest one-lap qualifier. And Sainz has been doing better than he has recently. Sainz also really believes in himself. He also works really hard. He would also be likely to get the team around him because of that work ethic. And if you are suggesting that maybe there was a potential, you know, a gulf between the management and Verstappen at Red Bull, well, Perez isn't good enough to be able to convincingly nerf one driver and have the other
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so my plan will work
if
with Sainz.
You want to nerf someone, your plan works with Sainz for sure.
And from a fan point of view, from an entertainment point of view, that is a good pair up that we want to see. You know, that's a heavyweight title fight. There's a belt on the line in that fight.
Now, someone in our chat, in the Patreon chat, has suggested, well, why not Alonso? That would be like a really interesting pick.
Because, yeah.
Mercedes seat.
Yes. Okay, brilliant. Excellent. I was going to go to Ferrari next, but because actually Mercedes are currently fourth on my list because I did it in goodness order, and I think that might be flattering. But we can go to Mercedes next. So this is actually an easy one. So we've got an empty seat there. We put Alonso in. I think that is an interesting lineup because I would love to see what Alonso's relative pace is against Russell. We'd have a real proper marker to know whether he's just been looking good against Stroll or whether he really still has got it. And I want him to still have it.
Wait, if Alonso's had it good against Ocon or against anyone else in the last 10 years, basically.
I know Brad will say that's oversimplistic, but that's the biggest data point we have, isn't it? When drivers move against teammates, how they've done relative to those drivers. That's one of the biggest tools we've got.
Yeah, if you're ignoring, you know, different drivers get on with different cars that behave in different ways, and you know, you can argue that a particular car doesn't suit a certain driver. Yeah. If you just kind of put those things aside, I think if you have Hamilton versus Russell this year, and then you have Alonso versus Russell next year, over a full season, because the seasons are so long nowadays, you're going to get a pretty good idea of how they stack up, at least in this generation of car. Mm. You know, and also you can't say, well, it's, if Alonso did better than Hamilton, you couldn't say, well, yeah, but Hamilton's old because Alonso's older. So you've got, you would have a pretty fair idea of how they are right now.
Hands shooting up on the panel, Chris.
I was just saying the only thing about Alonso going to Mercedes is that, you know, as soon as he leaves, Aston Martin are going to have a championship winning car, because that's what always happens when Alonso moves.
No, the problem is the Mercedes this season is still a flawed car. There's still a problem with their wind tunnel. They still don't have the correlation. They do not understand this car. So if they have that same problem next season, then I'm more on board with your apples to apples comparison with Alonso and Hamilton. But if they have a car that works next season, then I don't think you can fairly compare Hamilton versus Russell this season to Alonso versus Russell next season. That is something you have to watch out for Formula One. And it's one of the reasons why we can spend hours arguing about who is the best driver.
We do. And we are.
Indeed.
I agree with Matt. But all I'd say is I don't think Mercedes are getting their act together. I think Mercedes right now are Williams in 1998. Nine, whenever they started being rubbish, or maybe they had a little resurgence, didn't they, in the Montoya Ralph Schumacher years? So maybe. Williams 2005
or McLaren 2013 when they started struggling getting into Q3s regularly, and it's that kind of dip.
Yeah, you know, it could be a decade's worth of dip here.
Yeah, and I think at the moment, just listen to them because they're telling us. You know, they're not going, yeah, we're about to get on top of it. They're going, oh, we don't know. We know they might come up with something. They're good enough to come up with something. But yeah, at the moment, yeah, I am losing a little bit of faith. But Russell versus Alonso is good in the driver pairing matchups. And that's realistic. That could happen. Like, that very legitimately could happen. And now George Russell, if he's able to land a technical knockout and go 12 rounds with Alonso and nick a points win, that's so good for his stock. So that nobody here is arguing. He's not my favourite driver. But no one here is arguing that he doesn't belong on the grid. He's definitely deserving of his place on the grid. But yeah, him against Alonso, that would be a good one for him to go and win that. And it's probably winnable.
The comparison I like is going to be with Ocon, who was formerly in line for that Mercedes seat and did, relative to Alonso's other teammates, pretty well against him over two seasons.
I see now there, that's interesting. So Matt's jumping us down the grid to Alpine, and that's the next driver that I was going to actually suggest that we just get rid of completely.
What?
Why? He's gone up against all the journeyman midfield drivers, and he's not looked the better of the driver pairings against Hülkenberg, against Alonso, against Perez. He hasn't looked the better driver out of any of those.
Yes, he has.
Has he?
He just has.
Okay, so, but Matt, would you find it fair that if we look at Alpine as the sixth best team at the moment,
they're like the 10th best team right now.
Gasly says he would have got points if he didn't have a visor in his, tear-off visor strip in his...
That was Ocon.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So he would have been in the points. Okay, for the purposes of this, broadly speaking, disastrous starts aside... Alpine being sixth generally wouldn't have been controversial at the beginning of the season. Would you agree that Ocon, on merit, on the career he's had, he's in about the right place?
No, I wouldn't. I think I haven't made a list. I haven't done the math here. But we've seen him win races, beat Vettel. We've seen him be close to Alonso. I don't think you can put him on the bottom half of the grid. For me, in the races especially, he's just very crafty. He kind of reminds me of Sainz a bit in that way, in that he might not always be faster. I think Gasly has a little bit of pace over him, especially in qualifying.
Yeah.
But over the course of a race, again, he's going to be one of those people that will score points for you very regularly by being incredibly consistent, by being very good on their tires, and having a lot of those skills that don't sparkle. But if you're running a team, you're very glad to have that driver driving for you.
Brad.
Okay, I'm going to be really, really nice to Matt here. So hear me out on this one. Jenson Button, before he won his championship, was there anything more about him? Did he show any more promise than Ocon has shown? They both had won one race. You know, Button had won one race before he then went on to win a championship, unless I'm misremembering. And he'd not always beaten his teammates, been kind of fine. You know, no one had a problem with him being in Formula One, but I don't think anyone was pointing to him as being a superstar now. He had a number of years in which he just hadn't done a lot. He was like, good, but fine. Then he got in a good car and then came alive, won the championship. Could you argue that that could be Ocon, but that's his level?
That's a really tough one for me to answer, if I'm being honest. One of the things about Ocon, when you ask me about like what made him stand out, this is like back when he drove for Force India, that finishing third in qualifying and that wet qualifying, the duel he had with Hamilton at the wet Suzuka, where Hamilton was like, yeah, no, I couldn't pass that guy. Vettel in an Aston, arguably as fast and possibly overfueled, not being able to get round him at Hungary, where he led 56 laps. The thing about Ocon is if you put him in the front, his mind doesn't collapse. And not every driver is that way.
Mm.
And he's shown me over a whole Grand Prix, basically, Hungary wasn't quite, that he can, you could put him in the front and he'll drive round and not let people get past him. And a lot of drivers would not be able to handle that pressure. Now, if you put him in a Mercedes or a Ferrari, could he do that? I can't answer that question, but I think he deserves the top half of the grid for what he's shown us in cars that were generally inferior.
It's my fault. I put the 50p in the trumpets, didn't I? That's that. Now it's just going around and around. But okay, I'll do you this compromise because everybody in Slack, when I said top four or midfield, everyone said midfield. How about I put him in the Aston Martin alongside Stroll to go and lead that team?
Ocon was good enough to rattle Alonso. That's all I'd say. He was good enough to like get under Alonso's skin a bit. So that says to me he's good enough.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He inspired one of Alonso's rare inter-team feuds. Yeah.
So can we rewind 8 seconds to where Spanner said, I'll put him in alongside Stroll?
At the moment, Stroll's, I got it at the moment, but we can go.
No, I don't care. This is about the ultimate F1 grid.
We can go there next.
Get
okay.
Rid of it.
All right. Whoa. Okay, we'll go there next. I just want to address some Jensen Button slander. And by the way, guys, if we are running over and you need to go, I know Brad is nursing a sore back. He might need to go and soak himself in the bath.
No, I'm fine.
Jensen Button,
I
think Jensen Button is better than you described there. Like, if you look at then his subsequent career, he was enough of a thorn in Hamilton's side. And he was, it's so hard to judge in that, like, 2015 Honda McLaren. But I think he was there or thereabouts. I don't think Alonso was schooling him regularly. So I think maybe post-championship Button, is it fair to say that that paints a better picture of him than the one you were painting?
But I think it speaks to the level of any F1 driver. They're there for a reason. That if they are given the right tools, that they can win a championship, whether it's, you know, one or four or seven, you know, that's the kind of level that we're dealing with. And, you know, three quarters of the grid probably has that ability.
Okay. If you're going to get rid of Stroll now, which I think so. I mean, the only slight defense I would say is if it wasn't the ultimate grid, if you just were a team, if you were a Haas or a Stake and you were just looking for someone with, you know, recent F1 experience who isn't in the wall all the time, then I think there is a case that he could be a paid driver in the field. I'm not saying he's going to set the world alight. It's not Ferrari that's going to hire him. I think that there might be a place on the grid for him even without the cash now that he's got 8 years experience.
In our you know, ultimate grid, there are no paid drivers.
Okay, he's out. Brad?
I think you give any of the drivers we said earlier on, those kind of F2 drivers that might be deserving of a shot, but we're not confident enough that they should actually get in. Porsche, Drogovic, all those guys. I think you give any of those a fraction of the experience and seat time that Stroll has had, and they are vastly better than Stroll.
But this is for next year, so that we can't give them that experience by next year.
Yeah, but I'm just using that as a marker of I don't think Stroll is good enough to be near the list, regardless of what you just said. You know,
I agree. I sort of agree. I was trying to soft land it into it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And the live Slack chat does agree as well. So who are we going to put in that now vacant Aston seat alongside Ocon? And we want someone who's going to give Ocon a real run for his money up there.
Well, you've just moved Alonso, so.
Yeah, Alonso's gone. That's what I'm saying. Alonso's at Mercedes now.
Alonso's gone. Tsunoda.
I love it. And that actually makes complete sense because he's probably destined to go there anyway. Okay. Yeah. And I like that matchup as well. So Tsunoda versus Ocon. Ocon's probably the known entity in that. And it's harder to judge people at Visa Cash App because the resources have been weird at that team. People have come in and out. People get sacked mid-season. But honestly, I think Tsunoda's record is better than people think. Yes, Gasly was a little better, but that was a very early Tsunoda, but he looked fine there against Gasly. Even though the results against Lawson were bad, he was still on race pace. He was decent, and he's absolutely schooling Ricardo at the moment.
Yeah, to me, his record against Lawson speaks more about Lawson than it does about Tsunoda. The thing that impresses me used to impress me the most about Sonoda was how far he got on his raw ability, because he didn't do much more than just drive the car as fast as he possibly could.
I see what you're saying. You're saying so despite the mistakes, despite the other stuff that wasn't going well and the mentality. Yeah. So despite getting nearly everything else wrong, he still had the raw pace to be there and hang in there.
Exactly. And I still think it's massively impressive as well when a driver comes over from Asia, for example, to Europe. During his junior career, you know, even when he arrived in Formula One, his English wasn't fantastic. You know, he wasn't fluid. It didn't sound like a native, you know, unlike his European counterparts will do. Mm. Just because that's the culture.
And that does change the media perception of people as well, if their communication is limited.
I agree with that. And the point I was going to make as well is how you handle the team in the junior category.
Good point.
Because you need to communicate with the team. And we hear about this so often when drivers like... when Dan Ticktum, I think it was, that was shipped off to Japan by Red Bull to go and race in Super Formula. And he's like, well, I don't speak Japanese. And they go, tough.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, he seems to be speaking to himself in Formula E as well. Like whenever I hear him on the radio, he's like begging his team, oh, come on, someone talk to me, please, I'm bored. And no one does.
Dan Ticktum threatens to quit racing every single time he gets in the car. And
is he not a candidate? Is he not on our list?
No.
Right, okay, fair enough. Okay, well, that means that we are probably going to introduce Lawson now. Oh, go on. Brad?
Yeah, no, I was actually going to move to the same thing as you. I was going to say there's at least two seats now available for Lisa's Crab Shack. So
we don't have any Visa Cash App drivers, so we've got Lawson. That's an absolute no-brainer. And in this scenario, I don't think Perez is going to accept a contract to drop down to Visa. So who partners Lawson? I think we've got a great opportunity here. Red Bull are going to look. They're going to delve into our pool of outsiders. Perhaps.
I'm going to argue for Behrmann to... I know he's in the Ferrari stable, and so Haas is like the natural place.
We can deal with that, though. We can have that.
I just think that Pizza Cat Flapper, just a slight upgrade on Haas, so I think he should go straight in there at a slightly better team.
Okay.
I'm just going to be honest. This is the only reason Brad came on the show, so he could say those words.
I don't know Iwasa at all, Chris. Is it way too early to put him in a seat?
No, he did 2 years in F2 and served himself incredibly well. He's currently racing in Japan because there was no F1 seat available for him. And in the last few years, he has been the top Red Bull junior driver in Formula 2.
Okay, so well, that kind of...
If it had to go to a Red Bull guy, I'd give it to him.
Okay, well, that makes the most sense. And I think it's going to be Behrmann is going to be a no-brainer in at Haas. So who do you put him in for then, Brad? So we've got Ollie Behrmann coming in, and I assume what we saw in round two, that's not a true reflection of what he's able to do. He was brought in really late. He was given a watching brief, very much a don't stick it in the wall brief, and he did everything that he was supposed to do. But he looked very, very comfortable from the second he got in the car. He looked absolutely fine. So Haas seems like a great place for him to land.
And the thing about Behrmann as well, and like I said earlier when we were talking about Porsche, came into F2 at just a stupidly young age. And the fact that he won, what was it, 4 or 5 races in his rookie season and, you know, stuck it on pole in Jeddah as well. I think he's just got a fantastic career ahead of him. And I'm already, even after his first season, I was convinced he's good enough to be in Formula One.
Too tall, but okay. So Brad,
that is true.
He's listed as like 5'10 or something, but he looks way taller than that.
Five.
So we've got Perez and Hülkenberg currently occupying the Haas seats. Brad, Jonna, just get it over with. Whose place is he taking?
Who's Behrmann? You're saying Behrmann's going to take one of those two?
Perez or Hülkenberg?
It's got to be... I know Perez has the wins. I know if you look at like the pure stats that Hülkenberg, you know, he's done the most races without a podium, yada, yada. But I think he's better than Perez.
Okay.
Like, that shows you how much we've seen of Perez that suggests that he's just not got that extra. I know you could argue that Perez beat Hülkenberg when they were teammates. And I still think Hülkenberg's better.
Okay, he's out. Perez is out. He's gone. He's overwhelming, and I'm alone, so he's gone. Matt?
No, I was just going to make the point. As long as your car isn't going to finish higher than fifth or sixth, then yeah, I might agree with Brad there. Hulkenberg is looking better than I expected him to.
I think Hulkenberg might be on the bubble anyway here. So, do we want Hulkenberg in that seat, or can you think of someone else from our list that you would want to put in? Bear in mind, we've already got youth in there now.
That's the thing. I was going to say, you know, we were talking about if you put Porcher in the Sauber, you need someone like Bottas alongside him to sort of coax the best out of them. And I think it's the same at Haas. They've already proven that two young drivers doesn't work.
Okay, so it looks like we've got Behrmann Hulkenberg lineup at Haas here. We're getting there, to be honest. Okay, so Stake, you cannot get rid of Bottas. You've made us fall in love with him. We didn't even know he was like that at Mercedes. Now we want to keep him. And look, he's a decent peddler as well. So Joe is a buy-in driver.
Get rid of him.
And he's a how-to guide of how to be a pay driver and swing under the radar, because he's not sticking it in the walls. He's reasonably close to Bottas, but he hasn't done anything to kind of show us a spark. I nearly had it in his first season. I was nearly getting a spark of like rooting for him, but it never materialized.
That's the thing. Joe was perfect for the team when they were Alfa Romeo, because they were really boring and they didn't really do anything. And you couldn't really remember why they were there in the first place. I definitely think that Porcher is a much more suitable fit for that team.
I think Joe's biggest problem is he doesn't have a billionaire father buying him a Formula One team. Because I think he would be better than Stroll.
Yeah, again,
and he's clearly can be in a race and cause fewer problems than Stroll, but he's not really, he's not delivered in the way that you'd want somebody to deliver in their like third season.
Yeah, but again, this is what happens with the pay drivers, and you do this a lot, Matt, and I think it's because you're nice. So you want to set as reasonable a bar as possible. So I'm going with Wanyu Zhou, who I like, and I go, right, yeah, but would you put him in a Ferrari? That's my bar. Whereas your bar is he better than Lance Stroll? Would he beat Lance Stroll? In fact, maybe that's what we do another time, guys. Why don't we do the ultimate pay driver grid and see who we'd put up there? Because, you know, that would be a decent... When you put a grid of the last 20 buy-in drivers, you are going to have some decent drivers on there. You know, it's not like mugs who can't keep it in a straight line.
Can I put in like the 60 plus gentleman drivers that you get in GT racing?
No, F1 drivers. Yeah, if you just go, Derek Smithson, and we're going, okay, Chris, I guess we take your word for it.
Oh, I know plenty. I've worked with most of them.
So. Yeah, so sadly, do you know what? This is true. There's a lot of people saying sadly out for Joe. So it's not like anyone's baying for blood with Joe Guanyu. They are just saying it doesn't make this cut.
I do like him. Right. His outfit inspiration, it's good.
There you go. Him, Gasly, and Hamilton. If we do the fashion grid, they're up there.
Gasly?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Brad, defend me.
I just was going to point out that I think we're actually struggling to think of drivers, because we're going to have a few empty seats coming up.
I'm
now.
Not sure. Go on.
I now think that we are really doing quite well at keeping like the elite in, but we might have to get some guys back in who we've kicked out.
Well, no.
I think we're actually going to be okay. I think we're really close. Okay.
How many have you got left?
We've got Williams seats.
Yeah, we've got Ferrari, which we're happy with. So that's Leclerc, Hamilton. In fact, let's just do a little rundown of what we got so far. So at the top of the grid, we've got Verstappen and Sainz fighting it out in what will be a fascinating contest. Leclerc, Hamilton as well. Everybody is dying to see who comes out on top of that pairing. Either way, those two teams have got an absolutely stellar lineup. We skipped McLaren because I think everyone is broadly happy with the McLaren lineup.
Yeah, I think they should stay.
They are fantastic.
Yeah, they should stay.
Yeah, and so Norris and Piastri there. Mercedes, that's really exciting. I hope this one's possible as well. Russell, Alonso, possible. In fact, all of these are possible. This could
so
be
far,
the grid for
great.
Next season.
This is brilliant.
So Russell, Alonso, that is mouthwatering. Would love to see that. Okay, Ocon and Tsunoda. That one came out of left field, but it makes complete sense the way we talk that through. At Alpine, we now have a free spot. So that's our next free spot to do. And then we've got Williams.
No.
Stick Porcher in. He's French.
No.
Chris?
No. He's get him in the Sauber. There is nothing wrong with Ocon and Gasly.
Oh no, we've put Absolutely. Ocon in Aston. We've put Ocon in the
Ocon's
Aston.
Gone.
Yeah, he's gone. We promoted him. Yeah, we promoted him.
Boo boo, you're right. Let's go with like an IndyCar driver just for funsies.
But, so
because Andretti's going to buy the team.
The winner of the shootout gets the seat at Alpine because Andretti's bought them. This is perfect.
Yeah, and you know what? Second place gets two seasons in the Alpine.
Or doing.
So hang on, who is the top IndyCar driver? Joseph Newgarden. Joseph Newgarden gets it.
How old is he?
Go on.
No. No, he's like 70.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to stick a young driver in there, it needs to be like a Pato O'Ward or an Alex Palou.
So O'Ward is the name we've heard banded about a lot.
If they're that good, why are they not just dominating? Palou, I think, is the one out of those two.
Many reasons. Brad, you know spec series. You know it's not all just about the driver.
Hang on, I'm going to say Palou or O'Ward to the Slack and see. Let them decide.
Also, Palou did dominate last year's championship. He won it with a race to spare. He's one of a handful of drivers to have ever done it in history.
Right, well, I'm sure he'll do very well in our shootout then Silverstone.
But O'Ward has driven for Red Bull. They tried to put him in Super Formula and get him in the sport years ago. I think
he's winning.
It's a tougher choice than you think. But my personal favorite. Just going back in history, if we could have a young Scott Dixon, that would be my 100% choice always.
That's the thing. If you could have a young Dixon or a young Newgarden or like all these IndyCar veterans you have now, if you could have got them when they were like 21, they would have been fantastic.
Dixon was special, man. Oh, so metronomic and consistent.
Spanners, they're not going to agree. So just pencil in.
Palou.
Hang on. Just IndyCar shootout winner. and then people can choose their own. People are going to be fans of different IndyCar drivers, so you can have your own magical
But the
scenario.
Slack chat has really, universally said Palou there. There's been
loads of... Yeah, okay,
Palou
then.
Palou, okay. Can what's his first name?
Alex.
Palou. I don't know anything about that driver, but look at that. What a lineup. And he's up against Gasly there. So IndyCar, you have selected your champion to come into F1. And your first gladiator matchup is Pierre Gasly, and that's a big fight because I rate Gasly very highly. So we've got Lawson and Iwasa at Visa Cash App or whatever name Brad is inventing. Bottas and Porcher at stake. Behrman and Hülkenberg currently at Haas, and we've got the Williams seat. So I think Logan Sargeant is not top of my list and isn't in this elite tier list, regardless of whether he, as Matt says, fulfills any criteria as a buy-in driver, which I get yelled at for.
Can I just say, I listened to that whilst I was cleaning my garage yesterday. I didn't buy Matt's argument. No. I'm sorry, Matt. I wanted you to have a good position there.
You're all welcome to be wrong. That's fine.
The fact that Sargeant fulfilled the basic license criteria wasn't convincing enough for me.
It's fair to try.
Low with Matt, we've learned today, haven't we?
I'm taking Sargeant out of our ultimate 2025 grid, our plausible 2025 grid. So that leaves a space open.
Nicholas Latifi, my boy.
What are you on about?
Kidding.
Oh my God.
Clearly.
And you think I cause chaos, honestly.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, as much as I love Nicky, sorry to do this to you, man, but we all know it's going to be Andrea Kimi Antonelli.
Antonelli, yes. Very good. Well done.
Can I just explain why I think he's completely correct in that assessment? Because on the face of it, Antonelli doesn't have stellar F2 results yet, but I think his junior career prior to F2 speaks for itself. And already in F2, in a team that seems to be struggling with this new F2 car a little bit, I've already seen flashes of brilliance that people spoke about. His qualifying performance at Melbourne and how... He's jumped a rung of the ladder anyway, so it's a big ask anyway to go straight into Formula 2. And I still think he is one of the drivers that has got to grips with it, and he could still win this championship or certainly show extremely well. I think it's going to be Antonelli.
And I don't think we can overstate the jump that he's made quite enough, because going from Formula Regional, which is a sub F3 level championship, and going to F2, like doubling the amount of power that he had available to him last year, tons more downforce, completely different style of driving as well with this new car. Not to mention the fact that he's never run on the Pirelli rubber, whereas every single person he's up against will have driven it either in F2 before or in Formula 3 at some point. So I don't think it's nowhere near as simple as just looking at Antonelli and going, oh, well, he's not doing very well. Why is everyone making such a big deal out of him? Because he is doing a far better job than it looks like on paper.
Could it just be that the hype is a little early, Brad?
I think people get their backs up when there is a lot of hype about anyone, especially if they've not specifically followed that driver themselves and kind of got behind them and become a fan. And people will, it's quite easy with the amount of hype that's been behind Antonelli to point to the first couple of races and say, well, you know, what was this all about then? But I'm fully with Chris. I think the step he's taken and how different these cars are and how difficult they are and how difficult the field is and how difficult his teammate is up against Behrmann. I think if Behrmann hadn't already got a seat in our pretend grid here, I'd be arguing for Behrmann over Antonelli on current results. Not just because of his Ferrari showing, but also because of his Formula 2 showing this year and last year. His results don't remotely reflect how good he's been. And I think he probably would have been on pole at Melbourne without red flags coming out every single time he was on for a lap. Mm. And instead he started 16th. So Behrmann hasn't had a fair shake. But Antonelli, when he got the shot, he did qualify up near the front. I think it was P2 for the feature race. And it feels like he's now had his practice. He's had a couple of races to get his head around the tyres and the car. And now he's going to kick on and be something special. So just before I finish my point here, I just want to throw in, as a reserve driver for the whole championship, I'm just going to propose Zane Maloney, who's also been really good in F2 this year.
That's a really good shout. And also, just final quick point on Antonelli. Hasn't driven the first three tracks of the F2 season ever in his life as well, just to add that into the mix.
So the very last one on our list is Hülkenberg, who has kept his seat by default at the moment. It's Behrmann, exciting young talent, and the old steady hand of Hülkenberg. But Matt, I think you may have been trying to get in on the last Williams seat.
Well, because we're talking about Williams, I'm going to make you angry and ask the
angrier
question.
Yeah. I still remember the intro.
Sorry.
And the piano.
But you did ask for it. I have the WhatsApp. I'm going to ask a question. Do we think Albon really deserves Williams? Or should he be farther up the grid?
Yeah, we sort of assumed that. So I actually think he's not come under our microscope at the moment. I don't want to put him further up the grid. If anyway, he's in the right place.
I don't think there's any space at teams further up the grid.
Yeah, who would he replace?
What's further up than Williams that you'd... Which team out of everything we picked is higher up than Williams that you'd say Albon should kick one of those drivers out?
There's only one possibility, I think, and that's going back into the Red Bull fold. So could you argue he goes in instead of Owasa?
Oh, maybe instead of Owasa. Yeah, in that team.
But then it goes back to the point of, what is the point of the RB team?
Yeah.
Because he's not going to end up back at Red Bull. So if I was Albon, I'd be steering as far away from the Red Bull teams as...
Yeah, I don't think RB is a step... Oh, I don't want to call them that.
No, I don't either.
I think you do the right thing, Spanners.
Visa Cash App.
Giving the name.
Visa Cash App RB.
I've heard another podcast call them MasterCard Google Pay RB.
It's spiteful.
But I don't think that's a step up anyway. I don't think that team is a step up. I think that's a sideways step at best. So
yeah, a lot of people are saying that he could swap with Gasly, but then again, you know, the way Alpine are going, is that necessarily a step up? So I think I'm happy with him at leading Williams, importantly.
Just to address Hayden's point in our Slack chat, who says that Stroll should be in ahead of Palou, all I'd say is I think that's probably based on the fact that Stroll has had strong results occasionally. You know, he's got podiums, he's had a pole position, etc., and Palou hasn't. But I think if you're looking at, we also know Stroll's level
and his limit.
He's reached his limit and we haven't seen Palou's level. And so I'd just rather see him have a chance. And I bet my bottom dollar he wouldn't get an 8-year chance like Stroll has had. So Stroll's had his opportunities. Anyway, back to where we were.
Palou hasn't had a shot because he's not been in Formula One, you know. But the fact that he's won two IndyCar titles, which is already pretty remote, you know, in itself, but also the manner in which he won it last year as well, which put him amongst a very elite group of drivers to win it with a race to spare. then I would be more excited about Palou than probably any other driver currently outside of the F1 bubble. Yeah.
Given that we're 80 minutes into our, hey, lads, do you want to jump on for a quick 40-minute stream to answer Justin's question? seeing as that's the case, very last one, can anyone oust Hülkenberg from that final seat? Because I'm a big fan of Hülkenberg. I think he's still looking really quick. Considering that that's one of the bottom three teams, I'm perfectly happy with Hülkenberg being on our ultimate grid. His career is worthy.
I'm just going to say I don't want him to oust him, but if there's anyone that's around that bubble that could, maybe Perez.
Yeah, maybe that's, Perez as well. It. Yeah, I think I would. You made me kick out Perez for Hülkenberg, and now you're saying maybe Perez.
Because Hülkenberg hasn't had a shot at a top team. Hülkenberg hasn't had the opportunity Perez has had. And I know Hülkenberg has some annoying stats, but he's also not had the same opportunity. So I think Perez had enough years now at a top team that we know his level against a very, very top driver. We haven't necessarily had that with Hülkenberg. That's my only argument to keep him there. And he's on form at the moment.
He is on form. That's true.
In defense of the stats as well, you know, Lando Norris now has the most number of podiums without a win. He's taken that record off of Nick Heidfeld. And I don't think anyone's, you know, less excited to see Norris in Formula One.
Than who? Than you?
No, just no one's like, oh, well, clearly he's washed up.
No, I see what you're saying. Yeah, everyone's still very excited about Lando Norris. I get your point. Okay, it looks like we have our ultimate plausible, exciting 2025 grid. Before I read it out, I will have to say, go and follow Christopher at Chris on Racing. And go and follow Brad Philpott. Brad, you've just done a video on the Rotax karting.
Yes, go check out my video that launched today, driving the fastest arrive and drive karts in the UK. Just search for Brad Philpott on YouTube. It's a half-decent five-minute watch, I think.
It is.
The most successful video in the first 7 hours that I've had this year.
Very annoyingly good at making videos. I don't think you quite realise, and you just sort of throw them together as well, and they always seem to land. So go and check out Brad's YouTube channel in general. Matt, if we could get a link to that in the show notes, that'd be really cool. Can we pre-order a book yet, or is it in the works? What's happening with Amanda's book?
We can't order the books yet. I think the release will be in the fall, but the news is official. And in fact, I can tell you secretly that book two is already underway.
These are romantic Formula One novels. Go follow at A Weaver Writes on Twitter. Follow Matt at MattPT55. And remember to tell us if you want to come and hang out with us in Miami. There's a very plausible chance that we'll be doing some on-site stuff. But if not, we have a great club lined up where we're definitely going to go and hang out as well. So send me an email, though. I need to know if people are thinking of coming down. So even if you're like, oh, that sounds right, subject line Miami, spanners@mistapex.net, spanners@mistapex.net. And follow me at spannersready on Twitter. I hope you don't mind us jumping on midweek just because we had an interesting question to answer. And there's loads of follow-ups from that because also I love the idea of doing the top 20 pay drivers as well, and seeing how that grid would shake out. So we have our grid. Red Bull is Verstappen and Sainz. Ferrari, Leclerc and Hamilton. McLaren stays as it is, Norris and Piastri. Mercedes have Russell versus Alonso. Aston Martin get somewhat of an upgrade here, maybe, with Ocon and Tsunoda overall. And in Alpine, we have our IndyCar shootout winner, Palou. Am I saying that right? Palou? Versus Gasly. So there you go, IndyCar. You've got head-to-head. You've got a big challenge ahead. Lawson finally gets his F1 full season debut alongside Owasa. And also Albon and Antonelli go head to head at Williams. Can Antonelli prove the hype? At stake, we have Bottas because we're keeping him. Yes, mostly because of that one advert that sealed it. We love him now. Up against Porsche. And Haas sees rookie Ollie Bearman up against veteran Nico Hülkenberg. We will see you on Sunday for a news show. But wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. 85 minutes. Is anyone in trouble? Run away.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.